We're going to spend some time this morning talking about those. And the reason we're going to talk about those issues this morning is because those kinds of questions really fit very well with the theme of all of the topics that you've already heard yesterday from other speakers and that you'll hear later today. And as I listened yesterday to the speakers and as I looked at the lineup for today, the word that came to mind for me was stewardship. I mean, really, all the speakers that you're hearing here at the Range Beef Cow Symposium are talking about different aspects of stewardship. And every person in this room is really focused on issues of stewardship, right? I mean, you all have a desire to maintain, to grow your operations, and you can only do that if you make stewardship-type decisions. And what I was asked to speak about this morning is something that is very near and dear to my heart, which is the question of, once you have developed an operation, as a steward of that operation, what is your plan for carrying it on past the time that you can use it and direct it? And I spend a lot of time working with farm and ranch families on these very kinds of questions. And occasionally when I work with farm and ranch families, they say, you know, if we're sitting in your office, which is pictured up here, and you're a lawyer, what could you possibly know about what matters to us? And I'm sure there are a few of you in the room saying, what would a lawyer possibly know about what matters to us as cattle producers? Well, this is one office that I spend time in. This is another. This is a picture I took off my four-wheeler in August when I was bringing cattle into the ranch corrals for AIing. It was an early morning pasture north of our house. This is my husband. My husband is Douglas Olson. He's a fourth-generation farmer and rancher. My father-in-law, Art Olson, is front and center. Talk about pressure. Holy cow. And they operate a farm and a ranch in Banner County, Nebraska, which is just on the other side of the Wyoming line. It's about an hour from here, 10 miles across the line north and east of Cheyenne. And as a fourth-generation farmer and rancher, my husband and his father-in-law have worked hard to develop a transition plan that works for them and for our operation. And my husband and I have a particular interest in the generational and transition planning issues because this is our next generation. This is the fifth generation of Olsons that we're busy raising. Our sons are 10, almost 7, and 3. And, you know, our plan for them is very clear-cut. So our plan for them is that we're going to have an agronomist, a finance major, and a vet, and they're all going to come back to the ranch and expend their skills for the benefit of Olson Ranches. Now, because children always grow up to do exactly what their parents plan for them, they are likely to be dentists, right? So we do care about these issues, and we understand the kinds of concerns that each of you face. You know, the question of how you move something that you have invested a great deal of blood, sweat, and tears into the hands of someone else to carry it on, that's a really big question. And it requires that you think through very carefully how you're going to transition those assets in that operation. You know, this is the lawyerly definition of what a transition plan is. And you all can read that. In its simplest terms, a transition plan is how you decide where your assets are going to go when you no longer have a use for them. And in the context of farms and ranches, the questions for how you move those assets are much more detailed, much more complicated, much more hardcore than if you are a 92-year-old widow lady with a CD in a house, right? You have a lot more going on in your operations than simply some liquid assets in a bank and a small piece of real estate. And so when you as a farmer and ranch family think about how you're going to transition your assets, this is really what you need to think about. You need to think about the question of during your lifetime, not just at and after death, but during your lifetime, what are your goals as the owner? And where it's reasonable, what are the goals of those who operate with you who are not owners? And I want you to think about that distinction briefly. I promise I'm not calling on anyone, so you can raise your hands in safety here. If you are an owner of an operation, raise your hands. Okay? If you're an operator, raise your hands. If you're an owner and an operator, raise your hands. There's some differences in the group here. There are folks here who are owners. There are folks here who operate, and there are folks who are both. And for purposes of creating a plan, the buck stops with the owner. I make no friends with kids when parents and kids come as a family group into my office, and I tell the owners, parents of an operation, that they do not, hold on to your hats, they do not owe their children an inheritance. Did I offend anybody here? You don't owe your kids an inheritance, but you do owe them a plan. And if that plan includes transitioning your operation to the next generation who happens to be related to you, that's super. But that's not always the plan that works best for the operation. So we're going to do some baseline setting here today. The goal of this conversation is really to help you all make certain that when you sit down with someone to think through a transition plan, that the person with whom you're working is asking you the hard questions, and that you also are engaging in that conversation, you know, because it's very easy for me to ask you questions. And it can be fairly easy for you to give me an off-the-cuff simple answer, but the simple answer isn't always the right answer. You really have to dig down when you're thinking about how you're going to create a plan to transition your operation. And you have to be willing to answer hard questions honestly, because your answers aren't always easy and they're not always popular. So here's the first question. What do you want to do with your stuff during your lifetime? If you're the owner of the stuff, whether that's ground, whether that's corporate shares, whether that's LLC interests, whether it's cattle, whether it's a combination of all of those things, what do you want them to do for you during your lifetime? And of course, when you pass away, are you leaving a surviving spouse? And here's the first hard question. Is the surviving spouse someone who is able to take over the management of the operation if you are not there to help? And I'm not going to be gender specific here. I know there are women in the room who are the major decision makers for many aspects of a ranching operation, and there are women in the room who are not, and the same thing goes with men. I mean, in many instances, particularly in my generation of farmers and ranchers, you know, we share responsibilities. You know, and I would tell you candidly, I have fought probably as many straws for our AI program as my husband now has at this point since we've been married. But I wouldn't tell you I could pick a bull the way that he can. I wouldn't tell you that I am capable of marketing cattle when he does. You know, so the question becomes, if you have a surviving spouse, what is that surviving spouse's skill set, interest level, and ability to take on management going forward? And as you think through that conversation and you have that dialogue, the person with whom you're working to build a plan needs to be able to meet the needs of the surviving spouse, whether that means building in some management relationships with trusted employees, whether that involves some other aspect to bring someone alongside a surviving spouse. You can build that into your plan if you're working with someone who's creative and who's willing to ask those questions with you. What about if your spouse remarries? Now, I know everyone here who is married has picked the best person for them, and there's no likelihood after your spouse passes away that you could find anyone else you could share your life with. Or they might remarry. And if they remarry, you have to think about what could happen to the assets that the first marriage has developed over time. Because if you pass away, you have no control over who your spouse marries. You all understand that, right? Yeah, okay. So you have no control over that decision, but you do have the ability to say, in the event that my spouse does marry and perhaps marry someone with health issues or kid issues or credit issues, are there ways to proactively protect what the two of you have built in this first marriage in a plan going forward if you don't survive and they do remarry a spouse with those issues? And the answer to those questions is yes, there are ways to build in those kinds of protections, but you need to talk about what those protections might be and how it would work. And of course, here's the big one. When both of you are gone, what's going to happen to your assets? You know, I did some work earlier this year with the Nebraska Sandhills Grazing Coalition, and we did these kinds of conversations all around the panhandle and into central Nebraska. And we had producers who sat on the panels and who talked about their own transition issues. So it wasn't, thank heavens, just a lawyer talking the whole day. But there were producers who were there actually sharing their stories about transition and the issues that drove their own transition plans or changes in their plans. One of those producers told a story about what motivated him to start thinking about these issues. And the story he told was this. He had an elderly neighbor who passed away, who was a cattle man, and he had a son who was in his 50s. And the son came to this producer on the panel and said, "Could you tell me what shots you would recommend we give at weaning? Could you tell me when I should wean my cattle? Can you help me do some marketing? Because Dad never let me do any of this, and I don't know what we're supposed to do." And that producer said, "I vowed right then and there that no kid of mine would ever go to a neighbor and ask those questions." Right? So the question becomes, what are you going to do? And how are you going to do it? And if what you want to do involves continuing what you have expended an extraordinary amount of sweat, blood, and tears to create, those are big questions. How are you going to transition control, which means decision making? How are you going to transition management? Who's going to be the steward? And maybe the person who makes decisions and the person who manages the grass are the same, and maybe they're different. And by the way, the person who might do this in the next generation, if they're related to you, isn't just by default the oldest child you have. Right? You have to make decisions about those kinds of questions based on skill set. There was a reason on that slide of our three boys that I made the middle guy the finance major. Okay. Might be a good fit for him. And what's your timeline for transition? Are you going to wait to transition all of this experience and these responsibilities only when you pass away? Or are you going to build into your planning ways to transition over time, even while you're living? And by the way, there are really cool ways to do this. Cool ways to transition management without, for those of you who are worried about it, losing control. Lots of really neat tools available in a planning context to do this kind of decision making during your lifetime without losing control if that's something that you're concerned about doing. And here are some more. Everybody loves the tax stuff. I have one slide on taxes later, and I put it at the end just in case my 30 minutes ran out because I was sure all of you wanted to talk about taxes first thing this morning. So these are tax issues that may or may not impact your transition plan. So federal estate tax is the tax the federal government levies when you die. If you have an estate worth more than $5.49 million this year, that number ratchets up slowly every year. You may have federal gift tax questions if you do some transition during your lifetime. You may have generation skipping transfer tax issues if you bypass the next generation and give gifts to a grandchild generation. In some states, you have inheritance tax issues. Nebraska is a state that has inheritance taxes. Wyoming is a state that does not. So that's the state-related death tax. And there may be income tax questions involved, specifically or particularly capital gains questions, if you're transitioning appreciated assets like real estate. And depending on how you transition those and at what time and using what vehicle. And here's another biggie. Who are you going to give jobs to do? Because every transition plan has to contemplate the idea that at some point someone else is going to make decisions for you. So you need to think through who those folks are going to be. And again, age order, birth order is not the way you make this decision. It's skill set based. And last of all, for those of you who have entities in play, whether those are partnerships, LLCs, C-Corps, S-Corps, whatever those entities are, you need to work with someone who is sophisticated enough to understand how transitioning interests in the entity may impact the value of that entity, what kinds of tax consequences may be triggered, what kinds of options are open to you as part of a transition plan to deal with the transfer of those entities. And they also need to be asking you what your existing agreements are, because you may have agreements in place in relation to those entities that dictate some of the decision-making already. Which leads us to asset ownership, because as you think through a transition plan, you need to know what you own and how you own it, which sounds really simple, right? If you have an entity, C-Corp, S-Corp, LLC partnership, and you have some kind of agreement related to that entity, and you've read it in the last 6 months, raise your hand. Oh, not very many. A few, not very many. So you need to know what your agreements say about what you own, and you need to know how you own assets, because how you own assets may already dictate where they're going to go, even if you haven't intentionally planned for that. And in your proceedings, a lot of this is explained. I'm only going to touch on just a couple of these because I want to keep moving forward. But I want to touch on, first of all, joint tenancy. So joint tenancy, there I'm talking about joint tenants with rights of survivorship. Real estate accounts may be held as JTWROS, which means that if you and your spouse own assets as joint tenants and you die, your spouse owns everything just with the filing of a death certificate with the entity holder, whether that's the register of deeds or an account holder at a bank. So they own 100% regardless of what your estate plan says. Doesn't matter if your estate plan says my spouse will be able to enjoy the income for life on all our bank accounts. If you own joint tenants with rights of survivorship, your spouse owns the account separate and apart from your estate plan. The same thing goes for beneficiary designations on assets like life insurance, retirement accounts, qualified plans, payable on death designations on bank accounts. If you have those designations in place and they name, as they frequently do, your spouse in the first position and your kids in equal shares in the second position, those designations decide where those assets go without reference to any other planning you may have done. If you own as tenants in common up there on the top, if you and your spouse own real estate as tenants in common, you each have a 50% undivided interest, which means that you own 50% and your spouse owns 50% and your estate plan only controls the 50% you own, not the entirety of the parcel. And to the extent you have an entity in play and that entity has agreements, whether those are shareholders agreements, operating agreements, partnership agreements, those agreements, if they're properly drafted, will likely have provisions that say, if an interest holder dies, here are the priorities for regaining their shares. Maybe the corporation can buy the shares back in a first position as a first right of refusal. Maybe other shareholders can buy those shares out. Maybe the agreement says that if you're a shareholder and you want to give your interest to a revocable trust that you established, that's okay. But you need to know what the agreements say, because they will drive and dictate what you can do with the assets that you own. So it's important for you to know what you own and how you own it. This is what you need to be talking about whenever you're developing any kind of transition plan. And first off, I'm an estate planner. So one element of this, of course, is an estate plan. And an estate plan will typically, regardless of what state you're in, have some version of these kinds of documents in play. So you will need to have a will. You may need to have a trust. You should have powers of attorney that tell who's going to make financial and medical decisions for you if you can't while you're living. You do need to make decisions about who's going to be in charge of those decisions. And here's the easy way to do that, by the way. So if you're talking about a durable or a financial power of attorney, here's how you decide who holds the checkbook. You picture yourself laying in a hospital bed, unable to speak, but you can open your eyes, and at the end of your hospital bed, you see X holding your checkbook. Does the heart monitor go ding, 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 or does it stay nice and steady, right? So that's how you decide who has those jobs to do. And, you know, you laugh, but really seriously, that's how you think about it. Because that's the reality of when these documents kick in. When you can't do something about it, that's when your decisions to make a really important impact on your operation. Now, I want to say one thing here before I move on. If you are sitting in the room and you say, lawyers, they are forever about drumming up business, right? And by the way, there is not a lawyer joke you can tell me that I have not heard. My dad was a dairy farmer, and he believed it was very important for me to know how to laugh at myself, so he told me every lawyer joke known to man before he passed away. So if you don't do something intentional, where you sit down with a planner and you talk through these issues and you make hard decisions about what you want to do, do you know that you still made a decision and you still have a plan? You do. Every state has intestacy laws, which are laws that kick in if you pass away and you don't have a written plan. Then your state's statutes and your state's, in Nebraska, the unicameral, in your state's, whatever your legislative body is, those folks have decided for you where your assets are going to go. Did you know that? And every state has guardianship and conservatorship laws. So if you don't have powers of attorney in place, your family members can go to court and they can get somebody appointed to make decisions for you. In Nebraska, by the way, if you do that, you have to have a background check, you have to be fingerprinted, you have to have a credit check, you have to it has to be determined whether you've been ever listed on the child abuse and neglect registry, you know, if you have a criminal background. All those things have to happen before you can be a court-appointed guardian and conservator. And then they get to come to court every year and tell the court how you're doing. So there are plans in place if you don't choose your own. But I personally, you know, one of our legislators we know relatively well. I still wouldn't want Steve to make a decision about where my assets go when I die. So you have to think through whether you're going to think about this stuff or whether you're going to let your legislature decide for you where your assets go. And by the way, most of those legislators have no idea what to do with the cattle ranch. You need to think about potential tax exposure, and you also need to think about entity-related issues. So when you're developing a plan, I'm going to run through these quickly, make sure I get them all up there. There we go. These are the kinds of issues that you can address inside a well-crafted plan. And honestly, planning is a lot of fun. I mean, if you're working with someone who does the kind of work I do, I'd be surprised if they didn't say the same thing. This is an opportunity to be creative, and I will tell you honestly, and not just because I'm standing in front of the folks attending the Range Beef Cow Symposium, my ag clients are my favorite people to talk to. You're the smartest clients I have. You're the most thoughtful clients I have. You're the people who have invested the most in the assets that you've got, other than some of my small family, closely held business clients. So these are fun questions to kick around with clients who do what you do, because you spend a lot of time thinking about what you do and why you do it and how you can do it better. And you can address all of these questions inside a well-crafted plan. There are tools available to handle almost any permutation of issue you can throw at a planner. As long as you're working with someone who's willing to talk with you about that and willing to get creative with you. And by creative, I mean creative legally, not creative not legally. There's a difference. Okay, these are the kinds of fiduciaries that you might need to name as part of a plan. Those folks are defined in your proceedings as well. And these are the people who have decision-making responsibilities and who have the responsibility to implement your plan either when you're unable to do so or you've passed away and you're no longer here to oversee. And choosing these people is very, very important. It's very important to pick the people that are skilled to do this. And if you're looking around and thinking, well, I'm not sure there's anybody in my family who's ready to do any of that stuff, that's a warning to you that you need to begin training. If you haven't started training, you need to be training. And these people can be family members, they can be friends, they can be neighbors, they can be trusted employees. There are a lot of people who can do these jobs, but you have to pick the right person for your program. Here's a little bit of the tax stuff that we were talking about earlier. That's kind of fun. But looking at my clock, I have 3 minutes left. So if you want to hear more about taxes, come tonight to the bull session. I'm sure that will make no one walk in the door. Okay, so let's talk for just a minute more before I'm done with my time on entity, form, and related issues. This is a big deal. How many people here, again, I'm not calling on any of you, how many people have an entity involved in their operation in some way? A lot of you do. Entities are really cool. They do a lot of really neat things from a planning perspective and from an operational perspective both, and occasionally from a tax perspective. So when you are sitting with a planner, you need to know your entity. What entity do you have, and what does it hold? For those of you who have C-Corps that own real estate, that's a really important thing for a planner to know, because there are some pretty significant tax implications involved and interwoven into real estate held in C-Corps in the transition of those entities to the next generation. Are you respecting the entity form? This is a big one. You know, because I know that all of you here have so much extra time that you like to do board minutes and put them in your board book, right? Right? There, when I ask this question, normally a lot of heads go down. It happened again. Just so you know. Yeah, sure. We do that. Okay. You need to respect the entity form. You need to spend time making sure your records are up to date. And by records, I do mean those pesky minutes, even if they're consent minutes. You do need to have whatever meetings are required under your operating agreements each year. You really do actually have to do that stuff. And that is an excellent opportunity for your kids, for the next generation, to get involved in decision-making and conversations that you might not be able to have with them in other settings, particularly off-operation kids. And I do want to say this here. There are a lot of ways to plan for transition that keep control and direction in on-operation kids' hands and still allow there to be financial benefit at a minimum that flow out to off-operation kids. And those options are far more than buying life insurance and making that payable to off-operation kids. There are lots of creative ways to do that. So if you are a family, like so many families that have some kids on operation, some kids off operation, there are ways to plan to still recognize off operation and also recognize the sweat equity on operation. And last of all, you know, what are the financial implications of the entity that you are involved with? What do the operative agreements say about death and transition? They really do matter. What are the tax issues that are implicated because of the entity that is part of your operation? So those are all questions that you need to be kicking around with a planner as you think through what generational plan works best for your operation. And these are not cookie cutter answers. Every operation is different. Every client is different. Every family has a different set of circumstances that need to be addressed. So as you think through these questions, do make certain that when you talk with your planner, you're speaking honestly, you're speaking candidly, because the plan is only as good as the conversation that backs it up. Thanks very much.